Hello. Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. There's Ryan Finley. He's sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Los Angeles getting ready for another meaningless series, but this one is truly meaningless and playing the Dodgers too, probably, you know. You play them a lot, so this seems to happen a lot where it's like truly perfect timing to rub the salt in the wounds that you're playing the Dodgers, heading to the playoffs for the 11th consecutive season, the Dodgers. 33 games over 500, the Dodgers. Ryan, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the fact that there are probably Padre fans out there who in March or April bought tickets for this series in Dodger Stadium thinking – this would be the biggest series of the year. And, you know, for the Padres, it just isn't. And we saw in Houston over the weekend, Kevin, death is a process. And I think that the death of a season is a process. And Sunday was another big day in that regard. I mean, as poorly, I think, as they've played all season, made a season high four errors. Did not start Manny Machado or Fernando Tatis, neither played. Is this them waving the white flag?
That particular thing, I guess I suppose it could be a part of it in terms of like if yesterday was a more important game, might Tatis have played? Might they have found some other strategic point for Tatis to get some rest? The guy has had played in every game that he's been on the roster. He sat one start and he ended up coming in, getting a pinch hit single in Philadelphia and continuing on to play in that extra inning game. He has played in every game since he's been active. He had just this weekend, I believe Saturday, passed his season high in innings. He needed a rest. So like I'm qualifying it saying like, it wasn't like, oh, we're done. This is the reason why. I don't read too much into it. And Manny, I believe Manny's hurt. I believe he's the elbow's bad. And so, again, were it super, super important with, I don't know, with 19 games to play, which there were yesterday, he might've got a rest too, but yes, Ryan, all of this, there's many things that are waving the white flag.
And perhaps then it's fitting that this was the day in which they were officially eliminated from the National League West. There is no hope now. There hasn't been hope for a couple of weeks, probably, Kevin, but there's no official hope now. And we will spend the offseason breaking down what went wrong and all of that. I don't think that that's necessarily our place to do today. But to me, it is just so telling that they're facing a Dodger team that people keep wanting to pronounce as dead, a Dodgers organization that suffers, I think, this season more injuries than any team I can remember in terms of losing significant players for significant periods of time. And it doesn't matter. The Dodgers are a team that I think has plenty of excuses and doesn't make them. They just continue to go out and win most of the games that they play.
Yeah, significant pitchers in particular. And that happens year after year with them, it seems like. Yet, weird. The free agent signings they make are big. The kids they keep calling up are, big for them. And Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Will Smith. Like, it should be Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman up way up top. And then, Will Smith right there. It's like they don't have a big four, but they have a big two, a medium three, and a, medium four with J.D. Martinez this year, speaking of moves you make. And he's been hurt as well, but also been a significant contributor. So all of that together this year. But like you say, it's like year after year, and it's because of that they just are able to replace guys. They have the money to make up for mistakes, but they also I don't want to say they don't make as many mistakes, but it kind of seems like they don't, right? Like I'm reluctant to say because I don't follow them as closely, but because they have made mistakes, but they can swallow those. But then they also make a lot of really, really good calls on guys and they pass on certain guys. And it's remarkable, man. There's a culture. And then they brought in two guys in the last 4 years. One a couple years ago, in 19, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, who only enhanced that culture.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. They only enhanced that culture. And then, this isn't a team. They're so strange for a big market club, Kevin, I think. They don't necessarily sign every all-star that's out there on the market. They're not the Mets. They're not even the Padres when it comes to trying to do that. They seem to find and develop players. I'm thinking of Evan Phillips. I'm thinking of, you know, this was a club that before the year might not have had a closer, right? And not, and this guy who they were, I think he was a waiver claim a few years ago, have turned into an elite closer, a high level guy. Max Muncy, the story of Max Muncy will be told for the next 20 years, a guy who was just a guy until he got to LA, and it's been great. Chris Taylor, just a guy, except he works for the Dodgers. As we head into the offseason and as we head into next season, Kevin, I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but they remain the gold standard for how to, I think, run an organization. And I wonder going forward what the Padres can learn from them. But again, that's a different show. It's a different show.
That's apt. Also, that's a different show. That was something built over time. And you notice that they put those guys in really good positions. Again, they're, as the guy who's working on all the stories about what's wrong with the Padres, that's who's saying this right now. I've done the research, and the amount of times that Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman carried that team this year was freaking astronomical. So for all, everything you said is true, man. Everything you said is true. Max Muncy, key times, big games. Chris Taylor, same thing. Evan Phillips, Joe Kelly comes back, Lance Lynn comes back, whatever, right? Like all that's true. And yet the Padres were built for Xander Bogaerts and Manny Machado to have better seasons.
And when they don't, this is what happens.
Now you can find fault in that. You can find fault in that. Are those the right guys? Should you have also had a little, you know, made some better decisions on some other roster spots, other starting position spots? We can argue that. I'm telling you, the Padres were built for certain guys to carry them. And it made sense. And we were all excited and we all bought in, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Wasn't our money, except for what y'all spent on tickets and jerseys. But you know, that there, all of that is true. And then Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman kicked butt this year. I have an MVP vote. I don't ever start really breaking it down until a couple weeks left. So I've got another week, right? Because I want to, when I really get into it, but I'm telling you, like, how do I choose between the guys on the Braves that are carrying them, the guys on the Dodgers that are carrying them, right? And so I'll have to talk to people and really get inside the numbers to decide. But like, two guys on the Dodgers. Now, I think I know which one that I'm going to vote for if I vote for a Dodger. I think I know which one I'm going to vote for if I vote for a Brave. But I'm saying that like, there's multiple candidates on that team that have carried those teams.
Yeah, no, you're right. And by the way, and what I'm saying about the Dodgers does not diminish the fact that the Padres have found Ha-Sung Kim, who I think is the story of their season. And they've found another guy who you wrote about today, Kevin, and that's Luis Campusano. A little bit of a rough day for him yesterday. I think anytime you have to catch a knuckleball, it's probably not a great day for you as a catcher. But this is somebody who, since he came back from his injuries, is somebody who's been a good slash very good catcher. And again, if Will Smith is one of the standards for sort of good hitting catchers in the National League, Luis Campusano is not that far off statistically.
I would disagree with that, but okay. I mean, I think Will Smith is really good.
He's good, right.
But I don't know that – I think there's maybe that potential, but there's some in the organization that don't think there is, that they think he's – like there's a real divide. Like is he a defensive catcher? Is he – and let's not look at yesterday. It was an abysmal day, and maybe they wanted to see what he could do going a third day in a row for the first time in his career. Day game after night game for the fourth time in his career and the first time when it was three games in a row. Oh, and against a knuckleballer catching a knuckleballer for the first, four innings. That was a lot to ask of that kid yesterday. And so they saw that, okay, he had a bad game. How does he bounce back? But yeah, Luis has a long way to go. And the best that can probably be said is that they hope that he and Salas might be up here in 25, but that like by 26 that, you know, he and Salas are, you know, carrying the load. And I think that, and they could turn it into a strength that does mirror what the Padres or the Dodgers are able to get out of their catchers and maybe even better defensively.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And again, there's, you know, as we look forward, we don't think Gary Sanchez is going to be part of this next year. You know, the Padres then have to, it's so much of who they sign will tell you what they think about Luis Campusano. Does that make sense, Kevin?
It does. It does. I think that what it will tell you, it does. It will tell you. You're spot on. What I'll say is this. It will tell you that they expect Luis Campusano to catch 90 games.
Right.
That's what it'll tell you. But that they don't know that he can. They don't know how good he'll be for sure. And that they need a quality backup so that that position is not the offensive, like, just black hole that it has been for so many years.
Absolutely. Kevin, Jeff Sanders wrote about this last weekend, and I don't think you and I really had a chance to talk about it, you know, while we're talking about Padre catchers. The Nola story. It's interesting to me that this is a guy who'd gone to AAA and wasn't playing, and, you know, saw Anthony Rizzo talking about eye issues he's had and has gone through some testing. Do we think that this can begin to explain what happened, or is it a constellation of things, or do we even know?
I don't know that we would know for sure, but I don't see a way that we don't think this affected Austin Nola. Let's be clear. Austin Nola said to me, several others, the Padres, that he was fine, right? Mm-hmm. Austin Nola, my assumption is, wanted to keep his job and keep playing and be a part of what was everyone expected to be a winning team. And clearly was able to go out there and, you know, catch and, you know, all that. But I don't see how we wouldn't think that the resulting eye issues, dizziness, whatever didn't affect him for sure.
Sure. I think that leads to something too, that your average fan probably doesn't think about. And we talk about, I think, enough here, Kevin, but the idea that Major League Baseball players want to remain Major League Baseball players for as long as humanly possible. And that sometimes going to somebody with an injury, you know, playing through injuries in big league baseball is seen as a strength and not a weakness. Right.
And then there's also, I mean, that's absolutely. And then there's also got different guys' thresholds and what different guys are paying attention to and how hard they, you know, quote unquote grind and all that. And, you know, Austin Nola is, but he's in his 30s. Okay. This is a late bloomer, right? A position change to catcher in the minors, late in the minors. This guy doesn't have much left. Okay. On the branch. Mm-hmm. And I'm just now with like educated speculation here, right? Like I know the guy and I know the situation. I don't know what's inside his head, but it all makes sense that Austin Nola wanted to keep playing Major League Baseball, help what he believed was a championship contender win. That's what Austin Nola wanted to do. He's one of the most stand up and pretty straightforward and pretty down to earth guys. He is what he is. What you see is what you get, guys that I've covered.
Sure. And we even see that, I think, a little bit with Manny Machado too, in terms of fighting through injuries, playing, even though there's really no reason to be playing at this point. There's some concern, Kevin, that he may need elbow surgery. Based on this tennis elbow problem that does not seem to be getting better. Can I play devil's advocate here for a minute?
Please.
Why wasn't he shut down a week ago? And why isn't he being shut down today? And if you're paying this guy what you're paying this guy for 10 more years, what does it matter if he's playing in mid-September with his team eliminated from the playoffs?
It's a great question. I will just go start with the Padres' thought was that like a sweep in Texas. Now, laugh if you want. You're not the ones running. I'm not the ones running the team. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the one who invested all this money. I'm not the one who's a professional athlete or a general manager or a manager or a coach. And this is as invested as everyone on the outside is that buys the tickets, that wears the jerseys, whatever, is they're not as invested as these guys. They had to still think, look, they play the freaking A's, Rockies, Cardinals coming up. Okay. After that comes the Giants, who you just took 3 of 4, and then the White Sox. If you could do well against the Astros and Dodgers, you wanted to still believe that they would be stupid to throw in the towel because of who you played and the team that you believe you have. So they were still going at it. There's a thought that it's not going to make it worse. But yeah, believe me, it's on my list of things. What tennis elbow is, and if it's surgery, it's because there's a kind of like, I guess, a micro tear in the tendons. It's not a major surgery, but it's not a minor surgery, right? It's an endoscopy, I believe. And so the recovery is the bulk of the offseason. I think that's what I think. I've only started to kind of research it. So, you know, they believe that he'll be good for next year. Also, understand this. The player has a lot to say about this, and especially Manny Machado.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me, too, that the Padres really do take their cues from the player. Is that more so than other clubs, do you think?
I don't think so. But
okay.
There are also more some players, and Manny Machado is one of them. He may be the one, or one of two, or three, or four, or five. That, you know, you start paying people $30 million a year, the inmates run the asylum, and I don't mean that as a slam against any team, not against the Padres. I'm saying this ain't like guy's got an off-season job. We're going to bench you because you didn't hustle, or, you know, you're going to do everything we say because we own you, you know, in the 60s or 70s. Okay. Pre-free agency, that sort of thing. Like it's why managers don't go in and turn over tables. I mean, players will roll their eyes at them. Like, players are their own businesses playing for another business. Yes, players have a huge say in every sport on every team. Manny Machado has a big say in everything that happens with Manny Machado.
Yeah, Manny Machado's business brings in $30 million a year. It's a pretty good business. And I thought of Xander Bogaerts. I mean, when we're talking about players' input, you know, back in May, when, you know, things were starting to crater a little bit in Xander Bogaerts, you know, his wrist issue became a problem. You know, it seemed to me, just from what he had said, that he thought he could play through it because he had before. And instead, things got really bad, right? And then he got to the All-Star break. I mean, he's somebody who's certainly picked it up in the second half. And whether that's health or comfort or whatever, that's probably another show. But, you know, this is somebody who, yeah, I mean, just talk about player stuff. I don't know. Xander Bogaerts, Kevin, we don't need to dwell on this a whole lot. As we start to look back at his first year with the Padres, sort of what do we make of it? And what do we make of his last couple of months? Is that, if he can play like that year round, is that acceptable? What do we think?
It's impossible to get around the wrist situation and all that. Let's remember that first year, new hitting coaches, new system, new pitchers. Look, for $25 million, he should have been better. He knows that. But it's like, hey, are there some circumstances that would make you think that he would be better going forward? I believe that there are. I know the Padres believe there are. Xander Bogaerts believes there are. And there are signs. Yes. Is what he's done the last couple months good enough? No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Okay. The guy had a lot of bad habits to probably the lasting effect of him playing through all that pain and everything was the fact that he developed all these bad habits that, you know, he had to work through. And so I think that the offseason will be good for him. And then go ahead and pray, do whatever you do if you're a Padres fan, that he doesn't get hit by a pitch again or, you know, early next year or at any time next year. That's what could change a lot of things for Xander Bogaerts.
Absolutely. Kevin, where are we now just in terms of who they're going to play every day and who's going to get a long look? You know, as we sit here at noon on Monday, what do you think is next sort of in terms of roster movement and daily lineup stuff?
The unfortunate thing for them and us at this point of the year is there's not like anything. There's no great hope. Right. That's like, oh, wow, this is going to be exciting to watch this guy over the final 3 weeks. There's just not that guy when they're right now that's at the level to bring up to the majors to see. So there's not that. But probably some pitching call ups, probably some players let go. Like I said, the discussions going on in the organization recently are, OK, so when we're done, do we keep like, say, a Rich Hill for innings, right? Because we still got to fill these innings, got to play these games. Or do we bring up another pitcher and mm-hmm. you know, DFA Rich Hill? Yeah. Do we shut down certain guys, maybe? Some guys that maybe some of us don't even know the extent of their ailments or their mm-hmm. fatigue. Tim Hill, and bring up some other pitchers to see. So those are the discussions that have been going on. And that now that this weekend happened that I think we start to see some movement in that area. We still going to see Matthew Batten. They brought up Eggy Rosario, going to see him. If Manny Machado keeps playing, I don't know that it's at third base. Right. I don't think it is. So you see Eggy Rosario, Matthew Batten, Jose Azokar. Look, Trent Grisham has played quite a few innings. Juan Soto has played quite a few innings. As we mentioned, Fernando Tatis Jr. has played quite a few innings. And there's no reason for that to continue like it is.
Sure, sure. I think, Kevin, I've said this on this show before. In my previous life, when I just watched the Padres for fun, I really liked Jose Azokar. So he's a nice backup outfielder piece. It might be cool to see him get a little bit of a longer look. Before we go, Kevin, the NFL season started yesterday, yesterday was the first. You've covered both big league baseball and the NFL at a very high level. Explain to our listeners here, what is the biggest difference between
a game every day in this sport? I was talking yesterday with some people, some of the players, some of the PR staff. They know like what I used to do, right? So just how exciting it was to get to the field on Sunday. It was just such a big deal. And this can't be that way, right? That's what was great about the playoffs. That's what it was, right? About the baseball playoffs is that's what it felt like. You were now covering a bunch of NFL games. That was cool. So that's really the biggest difference. You really do have to temper yourself as a baseball player. Hey, manager, coach, beat writer. You got to make it through this grind. And football obviously is a grind because it's so physical. But there's a flow to it. You know, Sunday, it's just there's a flow to it. Those of you listening and not watching saw that I just did like a flow chart where Sunday's the peak of the flow. It's just like it's amazing how big it is. And afterward, like, yes, it's there's disappointment in a clubhouse, certainly after certain games. But after every game, there's disappointment after a loss and elation after a win. It doesn't come close to every single NFL game, basically, right? You worked the whole week for this one thing, and either you won or it was a success or it was a failure. I mean, it's remarkable to be in a locker room and see these human beings after a loss or a win after they spent the whole week, like basically war gaming for it. And that's what their mindset is when they're in it. It really is. It's two immensely different sports, two immensely different approaches. It was fascinating for me. I covered baseball first. It was fascinating for me to go back to the NFL and then come back and go, oh yeah, that's right. There's a game every day. There's 162 games in 182 days or whatever it is.
Yeah. Every NFL game's worth about 10 Major League Baseball games. Kevin, the people who are around the NFL and the people who are around big league baseball, I mean, every football coach I've ever been around has been intense. Is there that same level of sort of, is there that football mentality in baseball or no?
There's not, though. I do believe that some organizations are going that way or trying to. It can never be the same thing. There has to be that mix, but it is interesting that I believe that is a little bit of a change in the game today of trying to have a little bit of that mentality. Now, the Padres are even trying to figure that out. I've written about that. There has to be more urgency from this team. But look, it still has to be that you've got to make it to October, right? But the Padres are the personification of it used to be you can't win the division because basically you had to win your division to get to the playoffs in the MLB. So now I'll revise the old saying. You can't make it to the playoffs in April, but you can lose the playoffs in April. And that's the Padres.
Now, that's what they did this year.
It should be May, but that early, that first third of the season, right? Mm-hmm. Pre-Memorial Day. You can't clinch your playoff spot, but you can lose it.
Yeah.
You can argue that, obviously. The Padres lost their playoff spot when they screwed the pooch. When they really messed up against the Diamondbacks 7 games in 10 days, that's when this season was done. To me, said it at the time, say it now. But man, April and May were just such a waste.
Yeah. Well, and it becomes that thing too, right? If we're comparing it to football, you know, no football team wants to be in a position where they need to win their last five games to make the playoffs, right? You know, the Chargers, I think a Charger team of my youth started 0-4 and still made the playoffs. And at the time, they were one of the rare teams to have ever done, right? The Padres dug themselves such a big hole that they had to win, say, what, 5 of 7 against the Diamondbacks late in the year. And, you know, maybe next time don't dig yourself such a big hole.
Exactly. I'll tell you where I'm at, Ryan. And I don't have any animosity. I'm very happy about how my career took this turn back to baseball. I just don't really follow it anymore just because it was my life. And then the disappointment of professionally, but also personally for the people of San Diego, as I was the one who covered the departure and how I just think the Chargers botched that. I just don't have that in my life. And I'm walking through the airport yesterday in Houston and walking past a sports bar, and there a huge cheer goes out. Right. And I look up, and the first thing I'm drawn to is that on this one TV is a Giants game. And my instant thought was, man, these people are really into this. The Cowboys were on every other TV in the bar. I just, sure. I just not there.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. It's so
when I say Giants, I meant the San Francisco Giants.
San Francisco Giants. The night game.
There's a football Giants. The
and they were playing. You know who they were playing last night? The Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I know. So people were like, wait a minute. Same game, buddy. No, there was a baseball game on, and I thought, wow, these people are really into this baseball game involving the San Francisco Giants. But no, every other TV had the Cowboys on, and I'm telling you, packed bar and people going nuts. And that's how it is. Look, and don't get this wrong. Yesterday, you go in after the game, and players are checking their iPads because they have some pretty serious – fantasy football. Don't get mad, because guess what? Last year, when they were finishing strong on their way to the NLCS, players would go in after games on Sundays and check their iPads. It has nothing to do with winning or losing or whatever. They are, I mean, baseball players are big into fantasy football.
Absolutely. Kevin, I remember in my previous life covering college football, I'd fly home on Sundays. You want to know how big the NFL is? Sit in an airport on a Sunday and count the jerseys you see. And these aren't people going to and from games. These are people traveling in their favorite team's jersey. Yeah. Sit, try to find a seat in a bar in an airport on a day when there's football on. I mean, it's a different animal. Kevin, Padres, Dodgers here the next couple of days.
You know, it's a shame. They moved Clayton Kershaw. Yeah. Should have written about this in the newsletter today. That's a shame, because as great as he is, that's the pitcher the Padres have had the most success against over the last 4 years. That's the Dodgers pitcher they've actually – now, he was like 16-2 in his, you know, first 10 years against them or whatever it was, 30-2, whatever it was. It was a – you know, they couldn't touch him. But the last, I think, 4 years, the Padres were like – the Dodgers are, I think, like 2-6 when he starts against the Padres. So, as a matter of fact, the last time that we probably could have been very confident about the Padres was May 5th. 2023, when the Padres beat Clayton Kershaw, and we know what happened after that game.
And what they put on the video board that day?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Kevin, I'm excited to talk to you next time, because we're going to be talking about the Oakland A's.
And a ballpark that is disgusting, old, and the situation there is disgusting. And it's a pain in the rear end to get to and from, but I look forward to going there because two reasons. You don't go there very often if you cover the Padres.
Right.
And it will be gone soon. And it harkens back to the days of Three Rivers and Jack Murphy and Riverfront and the Astrodome. And when all these ballparks were these multi-use stadiums. And it's like, this is a bygone era. So I love going to that dump. I love going there for baseball because I don't get to go there. Used to have to go there at least once a year to cover football, and it was just terrible.
It's as if the Padres still played at Jack Murphy and nobody had touched Jack Murphy for 20 years, basically.
There was only one place worse than Jack Murphy in the NFL when it was all said and done, and that was the Oakland Coliseum.
All right, we'll leave it there. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, Kevin, I wish this series mattered so much. I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.